Good morning. Welcome to Brookings. I'm Mauricio Cárdenas, the director of the Latin America Initiative here at the Brookings Institution. It's a great honor to be hosting the Washington launch of the recently presented report of the Latin American Commission on Drugs and Democracy. As you probably know, and you read in the media, this commission was co-chaired by three former presidents of Latin America, former President Fernando Enrique Cardoso from Brazil, Cesar Gaviria from Colombia, and Ernesto Zedillo from Mexico. The commission included a very prominent number of Latin Americans from different areas of expertise, journalism, public officials, former public officials, analysts, including some writers like Sergio Ramirez from Nicaragua. And the recommendations of this commission are essentially the topic of today's session. We're going to hear first from the two of the three co-chairs, Presidents Cardoso and Gaviria, their views on the main issues, the main proposals. You may remember that the subtitle of this commission is toward a paradigm shift. And essentially what the commission is proposing is a change in the way we think about this issue. There's been a lot of debate, not just now. It's an issue with a long history. But I would just mention to start that in the past few weeks, we've seen many reports being published with similar ideas. And I have to start with one that we produce here at Brookings, which is the report of the Partnership for the Americas Commission. This is a commission that Brookings convened last year, including 10 very prominent Latin Americans. There is some overlap between the two commissions. President Zedillo was a co-chair of the Brookings Commission. But there was also a group of very prominent U.S. citizens in the Brookings Commission. And the recommendations are quite similar. We can get into the details, but essentially what this commission, the Brookings Commission, said is that there has to be a shift in terms of the policies that are used to deal with the drug problem, and more emphasis should be placed on demand, consumption, and less emphasis on eradication. There is a recent, very comprehensive article, I would call it a report, published in The Economist magazine, which for a long time has advocated for decriminalization of drugs, especially cannabis. Very recently, this past Saturday, Financial Times, in its editorial page, also called for a change in policy. And I would say that that the debate is now at a high point. There is, of course, also one has to mention President Obama's response to the calls for decriminalization, and he has basically said no in a very simple and direct way. You came here to hear the two former presidents. Let me say, rather than going into their long bios, that these are two very remarkable Latin Americans, and I would highlight their common themes in their bios. They both were ministers of finance, which is a very important aspect of their professional lives, because each one of them, at different times in the history of the countries, played a very important role in terms of the stabilization of the economies and to make sure that the economic growth was renewed. They have both been major institutional reformers. President Cardoso, when he started essentially his career in the Senate in Brazil, was a very important leader for constitutional reform, for democratization. And the same is true for President Gaviria, whom while he was president of Colombia in 1991, and was the major leader in an action of a constitution that has changed the political landscape of Colombia. I think many of the successes of Colombia have to do with that constitution, which basically opened up the doors for more representation, more participation, and essentially a more democratic society. And I would say that both were very successful presidents, true reformists that changed the status quo and certainly are fundamental for the what we've seen both in Colombia and Brazil in terms of economic progress and also social advancement. So without further ado, let me turn the floor to President Cardoso. He'll speak for about 10 minutes, maybe shorter, then President Gaviria, and then we'll open up for a Q&A where I hope to engage you with very short questions or comments, and also I'll ask you to introduce yourselves first before you make your comments. So, President Cardoso, it's a true pleasure to have you here at Brookings.
Well, thank you. Can I speak from here? Or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, good morning. Thank you very much. First of all, let me thank the Brookings for convening this this meeting. You know, I think this is an excellent opportunity to present the findings of the Latin American Commission on Drugs and Democracy. And I would say that the main thing has been already said, so probably we'll repeat, and I will try to be short and be very brief in order to have a maximum time for our debate. Yeah? Let me just recapitulate the reasons for the creation of the Commission and its mandate and the main recommendations. The decision taken by President Gaviria, President Cedillo, and myself to come to grips with the issue of drugs and democracy in Latin America was dictated by several competing reasons. First, because two of the most critical problems facing democracy in our region, violence and corruption, are closely associated with drugs. I think there is no one in Latin America with some sense of responsibility without having the sense that we need to stop violence and corruption, because both are undermining, if not democracy as an architecture, the routine of people, the day-by-day life of the population. You cannot assume the idea of a democracy without security for citizens. Second, because current policies based on the war on drugs strategies have clearly failed. I will wait for President Gaviria, who is much more well informed about the failure of that war, and he will explain to us what we already know about. Third, because drug-related crime and violence in countries like Colombia and Mexico, or in favelas of Rio, have reached a level that can no longer be tolerated. We are no longer talking about collateral damage or unintended consequence of the war on drugs, but of a major political and social threat to democracy. Fourth and last, because in most countries, discussion about the drug problem has so far been blocked by a taboo that associates any critique of the prohibitionist approach with tolerance toward crime. I think that was maybe one of the main reasons why we decided to join and to give maybe our names into that commission, because there is a taboo. So in order to break a taboo, it's necessary that some people take the decision to confront the main trend. Anti-narcotic policies are firmly rooted in prejudice and fears that bear little relation to reality. Opening up a broad discussion debate about these limits and undesirable effects of current policies is the precondition for progress in the search for more human and efficient strategies. With this goal in mind, we define our priority constituency as a public opinion in Latin American countries. So our report was oriented toward the Latin American audience, not a global one, but anyhow has some consequences at the global level. Hence the decision to have opinion makers and media leaders as members of the commission. We were also driven by international considerations. We wanted to present a report prior to the March 2009 meeting in Vienna of the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs. So the commission is composed not just by former presidents, but also by editors, owners of newspapers, influential novelists like Paulo Coelho or Mario Vargas Llosa, just to try to reach a more extended part of the public opinion. And you decide to prepare a report before the Vienna meeting. because it's also clear that it's impossible to try to curb the expansion of the drug consumption and the traffic without having a global approach to the issue. And the last March in Vienna, the United Nations sponsored a meeting on that. And I think it was important, that meeting, because some degrees of, you know, some seeds, new seeds are already there. So we are maybe other people, not just we, but several groups across the world, and even governments, are understanding it's time coming to introduce some changes. And from the very beginning, we felt the urgency of opening new channels of dialogue with the US, given the key role played by this country in the framing of regional and global anti-drug policies. Our mandate was thus to review and rethink the war on drugs strategy and explore workable alternatives. In the course of 1 year, and after listening to many voices, we gathered an overwhelming evidence about the failure of the war on drugs. Prohibitionist policies based on eradication, interdiction and criminalization of consumption simply are not working. Latin America remains the world's largest exporter of cocaine and cannabis. It is also fast becoming a major supplier of opium and heroin. Today, we are further than ever from the goal of eradicating drugs. The drastic revision of current policies is also imperative in view of the disastrous impact on people's life and the very fabric of society. I have already mentioned the rise throughout the region of the violence and corruption associated with the drug trade. We are indeed confronted with a double phenomenon, the criminalization of politics and the politicization of crime. In agreement with the Brookings Report on U.S. and Latin American relations, we are convinced that the long-term solution to the narco-traffic trade is to reduce the demand for drugs in the main consumer countries. That is the paradigm shift that you referred before. To move into this direction, we feel it is indispensable to differentiate among illicit substances according to the harm they inflict on people's health. In our report, we propose a paradigm shift in drug policy based on three guiding principles. Mitigate the harm caused by drugs, reduce drug consumption through education, and focus repressive action on the fight against organized crime. We also propose the careful evaluation of the convenience of decriminalization, the possession of cannabis for personal use. We are aware that this proposal is controversial, but we feel it is high time to deal with the question in the light of the best medical science. Let me add that in several countries in Latin America, we have already some law allowing a small portion of drug consumption. This is true for Mexico. In the case of Mexico, they include cocaine, not just cannabis. This is also true for Colombia. In the case of Brazil, it's true but vague. So the decision is in the hands of the police. This is a very, very close path toward extortion because it's not clear to what extent is possible or not. Anyhow, that's not a novelty. You have to reinforce the trend and to be more assertive in saying it's no more prohibited to use some kinds of drugs. Our approach does not imply tolerance toward drugs. We acknowledge that cannabis has an adverse impact on health, but the empirical evidence shows the hazards caused by this drug are similar to those caused by alcohol or tobacco. Reducing drug consumption is a cultural and educational challenge. For this to happen, the question must be openly debated in households, schools, churches, and media. The successful campaigns against tobacco consumption, or in another context, the prevent the spread of HIV/AIDS, demonstrate the effectiveness of messages based on clear language and arguments consistent with people's experience. Let's recall you all my own experience in Brazil in trying to reduce the expansion of AIDS. We decided to be very, very clear, and you use TV to show how to use condom. Imagine you in a Catholic society, the government sponsoring, you know, advertising, showing, but very crudely, how to proceed. And at the beginning, the World Health Organization predicted enormous expansion of AIDS in Brazil, enormous. The result was that you control, and now we have no more expansion. We are reducing even the proportion of those infected by IGV. And why? Not just because of propaganda, but also because we asked the NGOs composed by IGV-infected people to help the government and also to monitorize the public policies. And you offer treatment by free for everyone. So it's possible to deal with very difficult, question as HIV. Why not with cannabis or other forms of drug? Why not to be more clear in telling the society this, and using the instruments of mass media communication to provoke not just a debate but to provoke a reaction against the utilization of this kind of drugs? If we manage to reduce consumption through preventive actions and treat consumers as a matter of public health, we may break the grip of organized crime over addicts and significantly reduce the opportunities for violence and corruption. In many Latin American countries, a growing number of political, civic, and cultural leaders have been calling for a recasting of drug policies. Now is the time to engage U.S. policy and opinion makers in the debate. There are growing signs that changes in U.S. drug policy are imminent. Some have been already announced here, and it's clear that the new governor, Obama's governor, could have a different approach to the drug question. The U.S. delegation in Vienna endorsed needle exchange programs to reduce the transmission of HIV/AIDS and called for improving access to essential medicines, including opiates for medical and scientific purposes. This was already an important change in U.S. attitude. President Obama stressed the need to reduce the demand for drugs and control the flow of cash and drugs to countries like Mexico. In her visit to Mexico, Hillary Clinton spoke about the U.S. co-responsibility on the matter and the need for a new hemispheric partnership. We stand thus at a historical crossroad. There is much to be learned from the experience of European countries with harm reduction. Many cities in the Americas have also been trying safer, more efficient approaches. Let us review this idea, see what works, and define a common agenda of policy changes to deal with a critical issue that affects us all. That is the summing up of what I would like to transmit to you, just to open up the debate. So thank you very much. I suppose that President Gaviria will follow and will prove to us that really the Dragon War was is a failure. Go ahead, President.
Thank you, President Cardoso. I am joined. I am just going to emphasize in certain points. First, the theory, the hypothesis under the report is drugs are harmful. We don't like the word legalization because it means like drugs are not bad or that drugs are not harmful or that you can stop fighting narco trafficking. That is not the idea. The idea is the decriminalization of drugs, particularly cannabis, but decriminalization. What that means? Taking consumers out of the hands of judges and policemen and give it to the medical, give it to doctors and fathers and NGOs and schools and deal with the problem of consumption in a totally different way. We need to keep fighting narco-trafficking in the way we are doing, or even with more emphasis, using all the resources for that, and not putting consumers on jail. What we are asking about Latin America, we cannot copy the prohibitionist policies of the US. First of all, because it's too expensive. The US has already more than 500,000 people in jail just for using, for consumption and narco-trafficking. Not even talking about assaults and many crimes related to narco-trafficking. More than 500,000 people. That is more than all the population in jails in Europe, only for narco-trafficking in the US. And when you see the results of that, if there has been reduction of consumption or reduction of violence, you find nothing. So it's a policy that just made the business too big, and it's not really reducing consumption. It has a cost that is incredibly high. The US is spending $40 billion a year in fighting narco trafficking with results that are quite poor. Not to talk about failure, but are quite poor as results. What the Commission is asking the U.S. is at least have a debate, because here it's impossible to debate this issue. There is a kind that being talking about narco trafficking is being soft on crime. So no matter if people recognize that there is a failure about the whole war on drugs, it's impossible to talk about this. There is no debate in the U.S. And I think that is a big, big problem. We are not going to lecture the U.S., but the policy the U.S. has in place is not producing the results, to use the soft language. Plan Colombia, the effort to interrupt the flow of drugs from the Andean community to the U.S. Plan Colombia was an extraordinary effort. It spent $6 billion from the U.S., probably $40 or $50 billion from Colombia. Believe that, and I took this information from the Biden report. Talks that in the second phase, Colombia is going to put $44 billion. So it's not only an American effort. An extraordinary effort, very well executed. Everybody saw that. At the first 3 years was successful. At the 6th year was started to show it was a failure. And now it's a total failure. The Biden report stops in 2006. That was still handable. The Biden report is a report that Vice President Biden asked as chair of the Foreign Relations Committee. And they stopped. The Bush administration stopped giving information in 2006. The information of 2007 just shows that was totally out of hand, the production of drugs and the flow of drugs. The areas, for example, in Colombia increased 27%. The areas of coca leaves, 27% in 2007. It was very good for the security of Colombia, very, very good. Really helped us in training, and it was very important in training. In intelligence, we have a very good intelligence now. We have improved significantly our judicial system. We are much better prepared. We have a much better police. Those are things that Mexico lacks, some of them or most of them they lack. But we have improved our capacity to deal. Violence has been reduced significantly. Kidnapping has been reduced significantly. But in flow of drugs, nothing to show. Nothing to show for many reasons I will not say at this moment, probably later on. But what is going to happen in Mexico? Well, we all see what is happening in Mexico. I think the U.S. support is very important. I think the new language of the administration is very important. It will take them years before they have good intelligence and Plataforma Mexico in place. They will improve their judicial system. We all hope they will improve their police. We all hope they will do much better. Will that reduce the flow of drugs? No, it will not. It will be useful for the security of Mexico, but it will not be useful for the flow of drugs. If you see that we have Plan Colombia plus the effort of President Calderon, and that the flow of drugs is free, can you imagine, I mean, what we can expect in the future? The policy of trying to stop the flow of drugs to the U.S. is a failure. The new set of drugs say something, I think, very intelligent as his first statement. The problem of narco-trafficking is reducing the consumption of drugs in the U.S., and he didn't talk about Colombia or Plan Colombia or anything like that, because that policy has failed. So the only thing we can do is to reduce the consumption of drugs in the U.S. How did the U.S. get to the prohibitionist policy? With these arguments, they started to do polls. It's not only ideology, it's not only fundamentalism, it's something practical. It didn't show at the end practical, but it was practical. They started to make polls. And what those polls show, that addicts commit crimes to find money to buy drugs. And that people that commit crimes are drugged. So they say we have to put in jail all these people because they are a threat to society. What the Europeans started to do, and this is a very generalized in Europe, even in countries that are very tough on drugs, they are dealing with the consumers in a different way. I'm talking about Spain, I'm talking about Great Britain, I'm talking about Sweden, countries that are tough on drugs, that do have a strong policy in place, but are not dealing with consumers the way the US does. They say, well, if an addict commits crimes and do these things, what we need is to take the addicts and put it on the medical community, put a doctor, give them drugs, create centers to give them drugs. That is less harmful for society. We take the armor of the crime organizations, and they are doing that with a lot of success. With a lot of success. They have been very effective on that, and they deal with the problem in a different way. That's what we Latin Americans want to do now. But I want to be clear on this. Only decriminalizing drugs is not a policy. It doesn't work, because if you don't help the addicts, they become criminals. So only decriminalizing is not a policy. A policy is decriminalizing. Now, how can the US does that? Do you know how much money the US spent to put in the first year a person in jail for consuming drugs? $450,000. That is 10 times what cost to treat an addict, 10 times. So you can start moving money from law enforcement and that, and use it for addicts to give money. How to do that? Not through government officials. You need to use churches and NGOs and fathers and mothers and schools to try to create a different thing to take out consumers out. I think, of course, the US has to put his own experiences in place and develop programs and do things. The prevention programs of the US are a disaster. It's in all papers. There are two or three countries in Europe that do better. Why are so bad the US programs? Because they don't evaluate them. They don't evaluate them. They don't test them. They just put in place policemen and people saying, officials, don't consume drugs, you are going to jail. Things that are totally ineffective. So that is the other thing the US needs to change. It's not true that a very tough policy reduces the consumption of drugs. There are two countries in Europe that are very similar, with very different policies. Sweden, with a very tough policy, and Holland, with the most liberal policy in Europe. The levels of consumption in both countries are very similar. So it's not that having a very tough policy just really changes things. That has not been proven. Probably, I think I will end up here and later answer questions or something.
Thank you, President. Thank you. So let's now move into Q&A segment, and I'd very much like to encourage you to make your questions, and hopefully in a brief and concise way. Yes, sir. And then you.
Anthony Odi with Georgetown University. The argument is made that it is the illegality that creates the huge profits, the economic rents, and this is why gangs fight over it. And so I'd just like to ask either one of the presidents to clarify at which stages of the chain, from the farmer to the consumer, they would decriminalize, but equally, at which stages of the chain the excess profits might still be left. Thank you.
The big business is introducing the drugs to the US and selling in US streets. The reason why the cartels move from Colombia to Mexico and they are so powerful now is because the big business is putting the drug in US streets. The business is not so good at the campesino level. I mean, it's something that is good business, but no one gets rich out of planting coca leaves. It's just and what happened in Mexico is they didn't fight narco trafficking until President Calderon. I mean, really with the effort he's doing, and he suddenly discovered that was a military threat. The report validates using the military to confront, because when you have a military threat, we had Pablo Escobar in Colombia, we have it with FARC. Mexico has it with its cartels. So President Calderon and Mexico have no alternative. They became too powerful. They have to fight them the way they are doing it. They have to learn a lot of things before being really effective. And I think will take them years, because it took Colombia years to really have a... But what we should know is the flow of drugs is unstoppable. The Mexicans have to do what they are doing because there is no way out. Those people became too powerful, so they have to fight them. No way they can... That is a very significant problem that has not been talked in the U.S. yet, and is that the cartels took the illegal immigration as the business. They displaced all the coyotes, and now the cartels are the ones that put people in U.S. streets, so they have a capacity to enter drugs in an incredible way. They also have this whole problem of selling of arms in the border. There are 15,000 places to sell arms, almost unlimited, and that is one of the problems of the violence. Now, what happens? If you have 500,000 people in jail, you have a big business. I mean, and you don't, I frankly think, you don't need to have in the U.S. more than half of people in jail because of drugs. If you start to take consumers out of jail and give them, do what the Europeans call harm reduction, and give them to doctors and NGOs and give resources and not put them in jail but on the medical treatment, the problem will start to be slower as a business, start to shrink as a business. And that's one of the things. The U.S. has always worked with an idea that I think is wrong. If we put the place of drugs very high, we will be successful and we will stop. And it never happened. It went up for a few months, then went down. It's, of course, lower than when the war on drugs started. It's like a third in the value. And what you need is to reduce the size of the business. It became too big. Having so many people in jail made the business too risky, too big. And it's not clear that, but because the drugs are difficult to find or is risky to find, people stop using drugs. It's not true. It's not true. I mean, U.S. has Europe has a much more liberal policy and it doesn't have more drug addiction than in the U.S. You need to reduce the size of the business. You need to put in jail only narco-traffickers, not to put consumers in jail. That is a policy, I think, that is not working and is more harmful that bring benefits. When you put a young guy of a school because he consumed cannabis, it's a lot more harmful than society than just helping him to get out of addiction.
Let's collect a few questions. So okay. I have a lot of hands, but I please, sir, in the back, and
yes, then you. I would like to compliment you for your courage to bring this subject to the public debate, but I'd like to ask you if you don't consider this to be some sort of incomplete step, since you're defending the legalization of the consumer side while keep on defending the criminalization of the production and selling of drugs.
Let me collect two or three.
It's better.
So the lady in the back, right here. Yes, and then I'm going to move in this direction, Paulo, and you, sir.
Hi, my question is for Mr. President Gaviria. Did you smoke a bowl with George Soros before you came here today?
Did I what?
Okay, but...
Identify yourself.
Michelle
what happened
Fuchs.
With George Soros? What happened with George Soros?
Did you smoke with Mr. Soros before you came here today?
I don't know.
Or did
Mr.
you only
Soros.
Do it before the other
I
events
know,
he's been funding?
I don't
funding.
Know, Mr.
Let me,
Soros.
Smoke?
Yeah, well, let's go. Let's continue, Paulo, and then I'll get to you. But we have a question here, then the gentleman here on the right. Right here. Yes, please. Thank you.
Hi, Paulo Sotero from the Wilson Center. I'd like to address both presidents. Given the number of issues President Obama is dealing with right now, it seems unrealistic that right now he would be able to tackle this sort of problem. I don't think it's possible here. Now, should Latin American governments articulate, go ahead without the United States? President Lula, when he was here recently, said that he would announce there was some movement in that direction to articulate something in South America where the centers of production of illicit drugs are. He didn't give details, but I would not be surprised if what you produce here would be used in part of that effort. But my question is, should South American countries move ahead, take leadership, regardless of what the United States is willing to do right now? Is it possible, practically?
No. Thank you. And the last of this segment, then we'll do another round.
Alexandre Dor, I'm the Secretary for Security Affairs at the OAS, Multidimensional Security. And I welcome your initiative, and I think it's great that the former presidents of the three largest countries in terms of population in Latin America should take this initiative. And first, it is very good to have this approach in terms of public health. Because, of course, if you look at the information from World Health Organization, the drugs which kill on a large scale are precisely the legal ones, alcohol and tobacco, producing, including in the case of alcohol, domestic violence and so on. And we could say that illegal drugs kill more for being illegal than for being drugs, although that's a problem to be discussed. The second question. The second aspect is that it allows us to treat the question of drugs on a broader scope of public security. I mean, Latin America and the Caribbean are the most violent regions in the world. I mean, the homicide rates in our region, I mean, I'm excluding Canada and the United States, but Canada has the lowest, 1.7 homicides per year per each 100,000 inhabitants. But we have countries in Central America and the Caribbean where the rate is 50, 60 deaths and so on. So in average, it's three times more than the world average for violence on the whole. And only a part of that, although a large part, we can ascribe to drugs. So this idea of discussing this on a wider scope, I think it's fantastic. And my question, Paulo Sotero has already presented it. I mean, it's a question, once you've had this idea and you show in your report that the cost of drugs in developed countries has a lot more to do with putting them into the markets than with production, this also shows that the idea of alternative development is a good one. Because for the farmer in the producing areas, legal products would give them more money. They get very little for the production of coca leaves or marijuana and so on, because a large part of the cost for the final consumer is the cost of going through the borders, trying to buy the police and so on. And the question of public security is also important in the sense that you cannot have development or democratic consolidation if your police has not the confidence of the population. I'm finishing, yes. And is not well trained and well paid, for instance. So the question of public. So my question in the end is what Paulo Sotero presented here. What shall we do now? I mean, as President Obama has so many other very important things to deal with, shall the Latin American leaders go on? Thank you.
Thank you very much. You wanted to ask something? Yeah. Go ahead, because you've been waiting. Here's the microphone, and I'll give the word to the president.
My question is for President Gaviria. President, what is the expectation of the Commission in two specific cases in Colombia and Mexico? Because we saw all the cartel, the Sinaloa cartel, went out in the accelerator operation here at the U.S. But what are the expectations of this Commission regarding the case of Colombia? Are you guys waiting for more money to Colombia to combat drugs? And also for Mexico, United States doesn't have money right now to even, you know, improve the quality of life here. Do you guys expect more money to be sent to Mexico? Even Felipe Calderon, President Calderon, says that the money is not enough and the United States is not doing enough to help Mexico. So in two cases in specific, Colombia and Mexico, what is the expectation of your commission? That's it.
Let's split the question then. I will answer part of the question, you answer the second part of the question. First of all, our approach is rather modest. We're just opening up a debate on drugs. We are not solving every problem, because it's very difficult, it's impossible. What we are saying is that up to now, there is a failure. So we have to maybe to shift the approach and to concentrate our effort in reducing demand. Secondly, we are not proposing legalization, because legalization implies that drugs are not bad for health. They are bad for health. We are proposing, you know, the decriminalization for consumers. That's the key question. Third, regarding what to do, and if the Latin American governments have to wait for American position, yes or no. First, we have to recognize the enormous importance of U.S. as market for the drug consumption. This is crucial. Secondly, the U.S. has enormous weight in global decisions. The U.S. government can block some you know development. So we have to look at the American government. But that's not the same as to say, so we have to wait and we have nothing to do. No, I think we have several things can be done, and in fact are being done in Latin America. If you look what happened now in Vienna in the last meeting, the Brazilian government had a much more open approach than ever. I must tell you that one Brazilian minister wrote an article in one important newspaper in Brazil sustaining our views. And this is a minister from Lula's government. So the government is also preparing, you know, a specific set of policies. I think each one of Latin American government has to do something in spite of American position. What to do? And you have to have clarity in one thing. Crime is not just because of drug, and corruption is not just because of drug. So to reinforce the instruments in the hands of governments to cope with violence, to cope with corruption, is something very important. And the experience is a vast experience. In Colombia, in Bogota, in Medellin, they have been capable to reduce criminality. In the case of the city of Sao Paulo, the rates of homicides are coming down, but very dramatically. Now, I must say to you that, well, I'm following data. I'm not sure the data correspond to each one experience. But the rate of homicides in the center of the city of Sao Paulo and in the extended area around the center of Sao Paulo is comparable to the homicide rate in Paris. So they reduced dramatically. And why? Because of a specific set of policies. The police has to be more organized, under a more unified control, better equipped, and the police has to have the capacity to put people in jail. So we are not saying that it's not necessary to put people in jail. We are saying that it's not necessary to put use consumers in jail, but we have to put traffickers in jail. We have to be much more effective in fighting, you know, the criminality. And there are instruments to fight criminality, not just in Colombia. Now Mexico is also becoming to take important steps toward a more competent, you know, police, but also in other countries like in the case of Brazil. If we compare what's going on in Rio with what's going on in Sao Paulo or in Belo Horizonte, which is another provincial capital in Brazil, you see there are differences. If you look at the number of people in jail per thousands of inhabitants in Rio and in Sao Paulo we have a triple comparing to Rio. So the police in Rio is non-effective. So the criminality is going up more easily, not just because of drug. So there are sets of possibilities, and we don't just wait the American decision. I remember when I was in the presidency, we had tremendous debates about that because the America proposed a kind of unification of the control over drug and criminality. We refuse, because it's not a problem of to be under the umbrella of the United States to be capable to combat traffic or drug. We have to have also our views. Of course, we need some cooperation. And what is really very important, not just cooperation in terms of police and administration, but this, how can I put this, spirit has to change. And the spirit who prevails in America is repression against U.S. consumers. 500,000 people in jail. In Latin America, this is just impossible. We don't have penitentiary to put all that people in jail. We don't have. So it is transformed, it is extortion. not because the state has no capacity to keep that enormous amount of people in jail. And if we look in USA, the bulk of those who are in jail are black because they are poor. Huh? So there's some ingredients of social injustice in the approach. That is, I will stop here.
Thank you, President.
No, I think Colombia is very grateful of Plan Colombia, and that is in all political spectrum. It has been very useful for Colombia for security and taking control. It's not successful in the flow of drugs, and we expect the U.S. will not blame us because the flow of drugs has not reduced. I think Mexico deserves the right of being helped to deal with this whole problem that is U.S. origin, as Secretary Clinton said. Probably they will need a lot more resources of what they are receiving through Plan Merida. But to think that the problem will be solved like that is a fantasy. It's already showed that it didn't work. The U.S. has to do the effort to reduce its consumption. And I think the policies they have in place are wrong, are not working. They have to start to change. It's difficult. We all know it's difficult because public opinion has prejudices and fears. But it has to make the effort to start to change that. Much of the violence we have is not only because of the U.S. Control of local markets became a big, big issue of security. And we are not going to deal with the problem of drugs as the U.S. doing. We cannot copy the prohibitionist policies. We are looking to Europe. We are looking to Europe and to the policies of Europe to see how we improve. We already do that in Medellin and Bogotá and Cali, and those programs have been quite successful. But we are not going to deal in Latin America. The only government that is thinking that is President Uribe and has gone to Congress 4 times now. But Congress thinks it's a bad idea and will not do it to penalize drugs again. They will not do it. They know it's wrong. What happens is we are not putting so many people in jail because of consumption of drugs. The problem is we are not helping people. And if we don't help people, you get to violence. The problem is not only not to put people in jail, it's you need to really help them. And we are not doing that. We are not doing that. We are not doing that.
Thank you very much. We're going to stop this segment here because we have a panel. And the panel will provide more views. And I think more you'll see more divergence in the panel. I hope so, actually. So hold on to your questions and your comments because I think there'll be time to discuss them, and that will be Moises Naim's role in the next segment. So I'm going to ask the presidents to take a seat, and then we'll ask the panelists of the next segment. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.